Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. consistently ranks among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.
Today, in our modern world, we confuse tolerance with truth.
The commitment to population control and to the reduction of human population would be the most widely shared goal of the top leaders of the world's largest environmental organizations.
When we talk about how Christian nationalists use biblical texts, similar to what goes on with Marxists, they rip passages out of context and kind of weave them together as part of their political narrative.
There is no better evangelism tool you have than the Apostles and Nicene Creed. These give you the words you need to confess the saving faith to others.
Librarians in Michigan love listening to Issues Etc. And then God's children lived happily ever after. The end.
There's a lot of hype about Christian nationalism, but at the core of it, there is, in fact, a movement that probably should alarm all conservative Christians alike. But is the answer to that mainline Protestantism? Well, Bill McKibben recently argued that very thing in an article for The New Yorker. What does he get wrong about mainline Protestantism and Christian nationalism in that New Yorker article? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Friday afternoon, May the 12th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Mark Tooley will join us from the Institute on Religion and Democracy to talk about mainline Protestantism and Christian nationalism. Then Hadley Arkus, Professor Emeritus of Jurisprudence at Amherst College and author of Mere Natural Law, Originalism and the Anchoring Truths of the Constitution, will join us to discuss natural law. We'll spend some time then at the end talking about the normalization of pedophilia with Jane Robbins. She's author of a column for The Federalist titled The Next Frontier for the Hypersexualized Left, Normalizing Pedophilia. Mark Tooley is president of the Institute on Religion and Democracy based in Washington, D.C., and author of a recent column for Juicy Ecumenism titled Mainline Protestantism versus Christian Nationalism. Mark, welcome back.
Yes, always good to be with you.
What does Bill McKibben recently argue in a column for The New Yorker? What is he saying?
He's lamenting the influence of Christian nationalism, which he estimates afflicts perhaps one-third of all Americans. And so he offers up as his antidote to Christian nationalism mainline Protestantism, which he describes as more inclusive and welcoming and much better for society.
How is McKibben defining mainline Protestantism?
Well, he's basically describing historic liberal Protestantism, primarily found in what are called the Seven Sisters in American religion, the Methodists, the Presbyterians, the Lutherans, the Episcopalians, et cetera, who liberalized theologically, at least at the seminary level, early in the 20th century and have been in decline in terms of membership and influence continuously for the last 60 years.
How does McKibben define Christian nationalism?
He seems to describe it in ways that many people on the left do, and that anyone who is a conservative Christian and active in public life is by definition a Christian nationalist and trying to foist a specific theological perspective on society at large.
McKibben asserts that mainline Protestantism is growing. What are the real numbers?
It's a very, very bizarre assertion based on a single poll several years ago by a liberal advocacy group that in its poll counted any Protestant who was not specifically self-identifying as evangelical or born again is by definition a mainline Protestant. So his article inaccurately claims that mainline Protestantism is growing even among young people, which is just outright, demonstrably not true. In fact, this same liberal advocacy group has done subsequent polls showing a decline of mainline Protestantism, even by their standards.
You say that the decline of mainline Protestantism is partly responsible for the rise of Christian nationalism. What do you mean by that?
It could be argued that mainline Protestantism helped to found the United States, helped to shape the United States, helped the United States cohere and stay together, and were the primary mediating institutions of our public life, and that their decline over the last 60 years has fueled the greater division and polarization in our society, in that no one has been able to step forward and offer a persuasive alternative to what the mainline Protestants offered.
Would the progressive policy positions of mainline churches appeal to conservative Christians?
Of course they wouldn't. So that's what made Bill McKibben's offer of the mainline Protestants as an alternative to Christian nationalism all the sillier, in that the problem is mainline Protestantism has become marginal or inconsequential in American public life because even its own members don't subscribe to its very far left politics and theology. It's essentially divorced themselves from their own constituency in the 1960s and become more and more distant ever since.
You also point out that activists among mainline Protestant bodies practice a politics that's really no different from Christian nationalism. What do you mean by that?
The religious left, obviously, which is strongly rooted in mainline Protestantism, is just, if not more, dogmatic and absolutist than anyone on the so-called Christian nationalist right. So I would think any remedy to polarization and extremism would offer a vision of some kind of social harmony and not just another version of extreme polarization and division.
How did mainline Protestantism help create American civil religion?
Denominations that we identify with mainline Protestantism date back to the 1700s, and they were largely present from the beginning of the United States, and most of the founding fathers were members of them or their predecessors, and so they had a leading role in shaping American public life, and I think rather artfully crafted American civil religion in a way that was decidedly Protestant and biblical in its origins, but broad enough and non-specific enough that it was fairly seamlessly able eventually to absorb Catholics and Jews and others into the public conversation in a way that was able to keep the permissibility of religion in public life without shutting anybody out.
Folks like Bill McKibben, why do they lump together conservative Christians with Christian nationalists?
I don't know if it's disingenuous or a ploy, or if it's genuine and sincere in its lack of understanding, but it's certainly not helpful in confronting genuine Christian nationalism. There are real self-identified Christian nationalists who genuinely want a Christian confessional state that would privilege Christianity and Christians over other religions and people of other faiths. That is a decidedly small minority segment. The vast majority of people who are derided as Christian nationalists may sometimes fall for a version of a folk religion that conflates the country with their faith, but by and large, they're traditional religious believers who want to preserve traditional beliefs and want room for those traditional beliefs in public life.
You say that mainline Protestantism has died at its own hand. How so?
Mainline Protestantism formed the pillars of American public life and certainly of American religion for most of our history, and nobody dethroned them. They weren't replaced by anyone else. They essentially assured their own demise by forgetting who they were and rejecting their own or setting aside their own principles, their own traditional theology. The elites thought themselves, in effect, superior to their own constituency and did not feel accountable to their own constituency, and before they realized it, they were no longer the pillars of American society, but have moved to the sidelines and become almost inconsequential.
How do conservative Christians rightly respond to real Christian nationalism?
I'm pretty confident that most Christian conservatives do not want a theocracy or a confessional state in America. They support original American constitutional principles of a separation of church and state, no established religion, but full religious freedom for all and plenty of space for religious conversation and religious practice in public life undisguised. And so I think that conservatives and others who want to rebut what describes itself as Christian nationalism in terms of advocating a Christian confessional state need to defend American constitutional principles, but even more importantly, as Christians, to defend what Jesus outlines in the New Testament, which is not a Christian confessional state, but a robust church made up of his believers who are called out and are salt and light in society.
Mark, you're the author of the book, Taking Back the United Methodist Church. Give us an update on the latest on the split there in the UMC.
Methodist churches have a deadline that concludes this year, allowing them to leave the denomination with their properties. For conservative churches to leave, they have to vote by a two-thirds margin and then have to be ratified by their local governing state-level conference. And so literally, even as we speak, conferences around the country are meeting and ratifying the exits of hundreds of departing churches. Officially, about 3,100 churches have been ratified for exit from the denomination. Likely, there are another 1,000 or so standing by, waiting to be ratified, and very possibly the total exits by the end of this year will be 5,000 or so churches.
When will this be finalized?
The deadline for exiting is December 31st, but actually it's much earlier because having to be ratified by your local state convention, for most people that means either the spring or perhaps October, November. Then after that, there's no more opportunity.
Why can't individuals like Bill McKibben look at what's happening? It's all been done in slow motion over the last 3 years. What's happening there in the UMC and see that mainline Protestantism, as it's represented there by the UMC, is not the solution.
One reason mainline Protestantism has not been able to reverse its 60-year continuous decline is it will not acknowledge that it's in a bad situation. For them, it's primarily full speed ahead, and the fact that they've lost millions and millions of members and several mainline denominations literally may no longer exist in 10 years or less, but their ideological commitments are so strong and they're so confident that they are on, quote unquote, the right side of history, they're not willing to develop any self-critique.
What will the UMC look like after the deadline passes? What kind of a church body will we see?
Well, by next year, I would guess the United Methodist Church, which used to be 11 million members and was over 6 million in 2020, may be down to 4.5 million, thanks to the exits, the pandemic, and all the pre-existing decline in the denomination. The total number of Methodists who will have left the denomination, it may be 700,000, 800,000, 900,000. Most of them are moving into a new global Methodist church or new global Methodist denomination.
Mark Tooley is president of the Institute on Religion and Democracy based in Washington, D.C. He's author of a recent column for Juicy Ecumenism titled Mainline Protestantism versus Christian Nationalism. You can read it at issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Mark, thank you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
When we come back from the break, Hadley Arkus, he's author of a new book called Mere Natural Law, Originalism and the Anchoring Truths of the Constitution, will join us to talk about natural law and the U.S. Constitution. We'll be right back.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Have you ever visited Latin or South America, and while you were there, wanted to find a Lutheran church in which you could worship and receive the Lord's Supper? Did you know that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod has many partner churches in Latin and South America? In the May issue of the Lutheran Witness, we walk you through a brief history of our partners in the region. Subscribe to learn more and get a copy of Made and Marked by Christ, our May issue. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe or witness.lcms.org to learn more. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Is your child struggling at school? Are you thinking about homeschooling? Would you like help knowing what to teach and how to teach it? The Simply Classical curriculum from Memoria Press provides an enriching, step-by-step classical Christian education for students who have autism, learning or behavioral difficulties, ADHD, and more. You'll find everything you need, including daily lesson plans to guide your way. Learn more at simplyclassical.com. Use LPR23 to save on your order. Simplyclassical.com.
This is Pastor Leonard Payton of St. John Lutheran Church, Forest Park, Illinois. Forest Park being an inner ring suburb of Chicago. We're 1.5 miles south of Concordia University, Chicago, and a 10-minute walk from a metro station and the ends of both the Blue Line and the Green Line. If work is moving you to Chicago, consider joining us. If you're visiting Chicago, come worship with us. It's a church for a great city and a great location. Our website is stjohnforestpark.org.